about the, let's start out thing. Any questions about combinatorial search or the backtracking assignment or program? Yes, question. Okay, go over the bandwidth problem again. Okay, the question is, what is the bandwidth problem? Okay, first, what's the question? It's a question about, you want to know what the bandwidth problem is. Okay, so the question is, again, I give you as input a graph. I think here's a good example of a graph. Let's make it like this. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's say we arbitrarily assign numbers to the vertices just for reference. The question is, we want to find a way to lay these vertices out on the real line, 1, 2, 3, 4, such that we minimize the length of the maximum edge. Okay? So if we put it down in this order, 1, 2, 3, 4, there would be an edge from 1 to 4. And that would be a edge now of length 3 in this permutation of the vertices, correct? If on the other end we gave the permutation 1, 2, 4, 3, now what would this look like? The graph would look something like this. Does everybody agree? That permutation of the same vertices. Note, vertex 2 has degree 3. Vertex 2 has degree 3, right? The permutation is an order of the vertices on our line. And for any different permutation, okay, the length, if we count the length of the edge in terms of how many slots does it cover, the edge 1, 4 covers 3 slots here, right? Where it only covers 2 slots here. And in fact, every edge covers at most 2 slots there. Does everybody see that? Your job is to find the permutation that minimizes the length of the longest edge. A long edge is a bad edge. We want you to find the permutation such that the longest edge is as small as possible. Any questions about what we're trying to do? Okay. Any other questions about it? Like, how do you do it? Okay. I claim that for a given, do people believe, and I want to see a show of hands, does everybody agree that if I give you a permutation of vertices and I give you a graph, you could write a program to tell me what the longest edge is with that permutation? Does everybody agree that that is just a routine programming thing? Okay, have people agree with that? How many people don't agree with that? Like, I can't, don't know how to do that. I can't figure out how to do that. Okay? Again, the basic situation is you've got a graph. You're going to look at every edge in your graph. If I give you a numbering of, let's say I give you an array of the positions of each vertex. Here's numbers 1 through 5, 1 through 8. I give you a permutation describing the positions of those vertices. I think that's a permutation, right? You could now go through all the edges in the graph. Say, oh, edge ij and edge 2, 3 in the original graph. If we interpret edge vertex 2 as being at spot 4 and vertex 3 is at spot 2, that edge is really of length 2. Does everybody see that? If this is our permutation, we could use this to look up for any edge how long it is when we draw it. Do people see that? Okay. So if I want you to draw find a length of edge 5, 6, well, how long is edge 5, 6? Well, it's a distance from 8 to 3. Okay, or 5. So given a graph and a permutation, it is easy to count what the length of the longest edge is given that permutation. Any questions about that? If you can't see that, it's hopeless, okay? But if you can see that, then in some sense it is easy. Because now all you have to do to get a correct program is to one by one generate all permutations of n vertices. Okay? For each permutation, take that graph and measure how long the longest edge is. Take the biggest of those and report it. And that is a correct program for computing backtracking. Okay? For computing bandwidth. Any questions about that? Now, it's not as efficient as it would be if instead of constructing all permutations, you figured out a way to look to reject certain permutations as not leading to better, to shorter solutions, okay, based on some initial putting down of elements. And that's where the cleverness comes in. But the first thing, order of business is not the clever thing. Prove you can generate all permutations. Prove for any permutation you can evaluate it, okay? And then you've got a program that will work for probably up to n equals 10, maybe, okay? Any questions about that? Any questions at all? How many people have working programs, programs that are correct? Okay, a couple people admit to it. How fat, what, how big, where does yours die? 30 to 35 vertices is how far he got. How far did you get? What? Okay, so you're running out of gas at 15. He's right now, says he's doing 30 to 35. Okay? It's possible that you guys can beat that. If he can do that, other people can do better. The other possibility is he can't do that, that there's maybe some pruning he's doing that is a bug in introducing correctness. So don't be too intimidated by that result, okay? It's good. Again, I'm saying good things, but I'm just warning that things may probably lurk, okay? Any questions about the contest, okay? Question. Well, I am trying to find the fastest program here, okay? If you're asking me to find the fastest program, okay, I will go as far as it takes, okay? But on the other end, it depends what kind of a race we have. I'm trying to find the fastest, I have a group of athletes. We're trying to figure out how fast they are. How far a distance should they run over, okay? If, none of them can move, okay? Maybe at the distance at the length of this table would be enough to be a challenging race, right? I expect that the fastest programs will top out around in the 30s, but I may be wrong, okay? If you can get it going faster, that's good, okay? The trick is to see how fast you can make it, okay? Given the fact that it has to run in a minute and given that it's gotta be correct, okay? Any questions about that? Yes, question. Okay, so lower bound and upper bound. Like, I'm not quite sure I know what you're following through, but let's think what lower bound and upper bound were. Those are interesting words, okay? You're trying to find the optimum bandwidth, right? Let's say that we're trying to find what the, for a given graph G, we want to find out what's the bandwidth of that graph, right? Your job is to compute it exactly. Now, something that might help along the way might be something that does not compute the actual answer, but computes an upper bound that is bigger than the optimum bandwidth, or a lower bound that is less than smaller than the optimum bandwidth, smaller than or equal to. When your upper bound equals your lower bound, you have the right answer. Does everybody agree with that? If I tell you that the answer is at least 10 and no more than 10. What is the answer? 10, okay? Now, can you give me an upper bound for an n vertex graph, an upper bound on the size of the optimum bandwidth? N, okay, is an upper bound, good. Can someone give me a lower bound? One. Okay, that's a lower bound. Can you give me another lower bound? The degree of the vertex divided by two. Now, this is interesting. You're giving away some of your secrets here, right? Suppose I have a vertex of degree four. Is there any way I can lay out a graph just containing that vertex of degree four such that there is not going to be an edge of length two? How can I do it? Okay, I've got to put, okay, my degree four, boom. There's going to have to be places to put my four neighbors. Can I put all of them a distance of one from me? No. Okay. So now this gives you a lower bound on the size of the graph. Okay, actually, yeah, it's a lower bound on the bandwidth, right? Is the maximum degree divided by two? Does everybody agree with that? That's interesting information. You now know never to try any permutation or partial permutation, for example. I mean, somehow I claim this can help you, this insight, okay? So thinking in terms of upper and lower bounds, it means sort of on, you know, these are the things that help you prune things, help you know what the space of where the possible answers can be. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? So that's what I guess what that's with respect to. Any other questions? How long was your program? 350 lines. How long was your program? Maybe 150, okay? So again, there are programs that are not that large, okay, that will solve this thing, okay? So I encourage you to sit down and find that. Any questions here? What'd you program in? C++, C, okay? Any questions here? Okay, any other questions about the bandwidth assignment? So get going on that, and I look forward to seeing the results. Okay, let me see if I can move this. Boom. Okay, let's take a look at the problem of the day was, in fact, it had to do with searching again, just to make sure we understand the backtracking. It has to do with backtracking on a multiset. Okay, if you have a multi-set, that means a collection of items where items appear more than once. Okay, so 1, 1, 2, 2 is a multi-set. Now, if I ask for all different permutations made up of exactly the elements of a multi-set, how many permutations of n distinct things are there? N factorial. How many permutations of one distinct thing occurring n times are there? One. Does everybody see that? What do I get if I take this permutation and I move this one over here and replace it with the other one? What do I get? Same thing. Does everybody see that? So my question here for you is, suppose I want you to print out the permutations of a multiset. Okay? How can I do it? How many different ways should there be? Permutation should there be of four things? Four factorial is what? 24. If I'm to be believed, there's only six different permutations of this multiset. Does everybody see that? So how can I go about generating all the permutations of a multiset? This seems like a natural problem. This doesn't seem like a completely weird problem. Okay? What should I have to do to modify? What do I have to modify or do? I'm going to do it by backtracking, because that's how I generate everything, right? What are the three knobs that I have to control my backtracking code? What are they? Construct candidates, is a solution, and then print a solution, right? Those are the three basic knobs that I have. How could I modify? modifying my, what would be the best way to modify my normal permutation generator for generating permutations of distinct elements to multisets? Which one should I change? Construct candidates. Okay? That seems to be the best place to do it. You might say, well, I could just generate all permutations and then use print candidate to make sure that I only print one of them or something like that. Or is a solution to make sure, but that's bad, okay? Because there could be n factorial permutations and only one permutation of the multiset, right? So construct candidates. What are the candidates for the ith position given a particular multiset? Given a partial solution, I have to figure out what are the candidates for this position. What are they? How would I compute that? Yeah? Is it the number of unique elements in the multiset? Okay. Is it the number of elements in the multiset? I claim it is the number of remaining unique elements in the multiset. Does everybody see this? Here I've got 1, 1. Let's say this is the fourth slot. Here I've got 1, 1, 2, 2 in my multiset. If I had 1, 1, let's say I was looking to fill the third slot. My choices of possibilities for the third slot would either cannot be a 1 because I've used up all my 1s. Does everybody see that? It could be a 2. It can't be 2 2s because they're both going to be the same thing, right? I think that what I want to do here is say, take my multiset, my frequency of multisets, subtract the number of occurrences that I have used so far. And then any element that has at least one occurrence left that is not yet used, that is a candidate for the next position. Does everybody see that? I think that that makes sense now. Okay, that's not so hard, is it? Okay. Basically, what are the possible things I can put in this position? Okay. I claim any distinct element from my multi, originally, one way to represent it is I've got 2 1s and 2 2s. When I look at one, each time I put in an element, I'm going to decrease one from the count. An element whose count is 0, I can't use in the next slot. Okay? Any questions about that? And that's all that it takes to modify my machinery to generate permutations of multisets instead of permutations of distinct elements. Any questions? Any questions about how to do this? Okay. Okay, good. Any other questions about backtracking or anything else related to backtracking? So once, twice, okay, good. Okay, let's go on now and start talking about the next topic. By the way, we talked about the question. Yes. Yeah. When is the midterm? The midterm is a week from Thursday. So it is not this Thursday. It is a week from Thursday. Okay? But it will include dynamic programming. This I announced last class for those of you who weren't here. Okay? But it will include dynamic programming. Okay? So which we're covering today and the next, you know, in the next two classes. Any questions here? Okay. So we have three classes on dynamic programming and then the midterm. Yes. How do I know with the problem of the day, the question is, how did I know that it was not the same? Meaning, I think what you're concerned with is, how do I know I didn't develop this one twice, right? Well, let's think, how could I develop it twice, okay? If you think about it, the way that we're filling in the slots, we're sort of filling them in a lexicographic order, in some sense. We fill in a prefix, okay? And then we look at all the consequences of that prefix, okay? So that is sort of the idea that I want to use to only generate it once, okay? Let's think about it this way. I'm going to be, as I look at this slot over here, I am only going to be considering the distinct elements. If they were, let's say, if a promulti set on 1, 2, and 3 with a bunch of copies here, okay, I will be considering all the ways to put a 1 in. So I'm going to take for a given prefix, then put a 1 here in the third spot, and see all that can be done given that prefix and a 1. Once that's done, I'm going to put it in and do all that can be done with this prefix and a 2. Then I'm going to put it in and do all with this prefix and a 3. And then I'm finished with this prefix. I'm going to move back and change this. And you're never going to see this prefix combination again. That's how I know I'm not generating anything more than once. Okay? I'm generating them systematically in some alphabetical or lexicographical order. Okay? That's how I know that I'm not generating them again. Okay? Question. Well, I could sort them, or I don't have to. Okay? I mean, okay, if I sort the numbers from 1 to n and put them in as candidates from 1 to n, you know, sort of so the numbers always go in the candidate list in sorted order, okay, then you'll see a nice pattern, the thing that I'm generating, okay, that they're generated in all the ones that start with 1 will appear before any that start with 2, before any that start with 3. That's a lexicographic order. If you look at how we generated permutations, the same property held, right? We generated all permutations starting with 1, and then all starting with 2, and then all starting with 3. Now, if I didn't sort 1 through 3, I could do the same thing. H1 would only get generated order, but it's in some other arbitrary order. When you say something is sorted, does it matter if it's sorted in increasing order or decreasing order? Does it matter if the characters are sorted according to how they're alphabetized in English? Okay, so you know, let's say there were numbers. 1 would be alphabetically ahead of 2. Okay? Once you fix an order to the characters, you're generating them systematically from that. Okay? And I claim if you generate them systematically in the numerical order, or the alphabetical order, you will see the lexicographic order as a result of the generation here. Any questions? I don't know if that cleared up anything or made it worse. Any questions? Okay, any other questions about the ordering? How would we generate all the multisets of 1, 1, 2, 2? Just to make sure we do this thing. I would start out saying, what are all the multisets that begin with 1 permutations? What are all the ones that can begin with 1, 1, 2, 2? Now there's no other choices here, right? Alphabetically, what's the next one? 1, 2. If so, what are my choices here? I could put a 1, 2, and then there's no choice. Or I could put a 2, 1. Does everybody see that? Now what else is there? If nothing else, I can put in here. So I'm going to backtrack. I could start with a 2. If so, what are my next choices? I could put in a 1 here, a 1 here, and now I'm stuck. Or backtracking here, I put in a 2 and a 1. Or backtracking, I put in a 2 and a 2 and a 1 and a 1. And those are that's the order in which I will generate these multisets. If I always explore position candidate character 1 before character 2. That's the systematic order. That's how I know I'm not getting repeats. Okay? Because it's systematic order. If they're in alphabetical order, how can it repeat? How can it go backwards? Can't do it. Any questions? Any questions at all about this backtracking thing? Okay? Again, going once, going twice, no more. Okay?
Good.
So, what I'd like to talk about now, backtracking and exponential search are good things, okay? They're useful for solving certain classes of problems. There is a trouble, though, with exponential search, is that eventually it's going to hit a wall. He's the fastest flying program we have so far, and he can do bandwidth up to 30, okay? 35, okay? The algorithms that are going to be, that are really useful, that will work for large things, have to be polynomial, okay? And there are a couple of techniques that are used. We've talked about some algorithms that are polynomial, some of the graph algorithms. There is one general technique that is very, very powerful for designing polynomial efficient algorithms, okay, for optimization problems. Okay, optimization problems are bandwidth. You want to find what was the order that gave you the minimum bandwidth, right? Where you've got things that there's an inherent left-right order to, okay? Character strings are good examples of things that have an inherent left-right order. Look at this character string dynamic. The D is to the left of the Y is to the left of the N. See, there's a left-right order implicit in a string, okay? Dynamic programming is a general optimization problem, okay, that I find amazingly powerful and amazingly useful, okay? And once you understand it, it's actually not that difficult. But on the other hand, it is one of these things that looks like magic until you understand it, okay? So I recognize that it is hard to come to understand it. But once you understand it, it's the kind of a thing that you can apply almost instantly. Okay? I can tell you that if I find it easier to redesign a dynamic programming algorithm rather than look it up in a book. Okay? Because once, which is not true for most of the algorithms we talk in here. They're subtle. They're complicated. Okay? And we've seen a little bit of something that looked a little like dynamic programming, just so you'll recognize it. Remember we had Floyd's shortest path algorithm? We talked about it fairly briefly. That was Altair's shortest path. And it told you, just to remind you what that was, it said it wanted to know what was the shortest path from I to J, using at most vertices 1 through K as intermediaries. Does everyone remember that? Or sort of, how many people sort of remember seeing that? Okay, it went by at some point. What was that algorithm? It really said that we said the shortest path from I to J, using at most 1 through K as intermediaries, was the min of what? The shortest path from I to J, using at most K minus 1 as intermediaries, and from A, I to K, plus the distance from K to J, using at most K minus 1 as an intermediary. This is what the dynamic, the Floyd's algorithm was. Does everybody remember that? If you remember that, you went through it kind of quickly. But if you look at it, what it was doing was, there is a function here that is being computed recursively. A, I, J, K. A, I, J, K argument, right? And we computed this thing in terms of those other things. That was what Floyd's algorithm was. We went through it quick and it may have been a little complicated. But this is really what a example of dynamic programming is. I'm not going to talk about it more. Okay, if you understood that, you have a leg up on us. Okay? Is what dynamic programming really is a way to compute a recurrence relation. And this is a recurrence relation by storing partial results. That is all that dynamic programming is. It's computing a recurrence relation, storing partial results. Okay? Any questions about that? About Floyd's algorithm, how it worked, what it was? Again, I don't expect you completely got it. Okay? But recognize that what you were seeing is what we're going to be talking about now. Any questions? Okay, good. So let's move on. Okay, and again, what is going to make dynamic programming special is it's sort of like exhaustive search. Why was exhaustive search algorithm correct? Why is your bandwidth program correct? Well, I hope it's correct. I don't know for sure. I haven't seen it. But it should be correct if it is searching through all permutations and picking the best one. How can it be wrong? The winning solution was a permutation. If you want to find which is the best solution, look at all permutations and pick the best. Correctness for exhaustive search was easy, okay, but slow. The program was slow. That was the problem. What dynamic programming is really a way to systematically search all possibilities, okay, like exhaustive search, so we know it's going to be correct. But instead of recomputing things, we're going to store things. And that's what's going to provide the efficiency. Okay? Any questions? These are the philosophy of what we're doing here. Okay? Any questions? Okay. We'll learn from examples. Okay? One last bit of just, let's say, rehearsal, background to make sure everybody understands it. How many people here have ever done anything with a recurrence relation? Okay, who have never heard of a recurrence relation? Admit it now if you haven't. Okay, everyone, one or two people claim not to. If you took AMS 301, you probably did a lot of recurrence relations, right? Who here has taken AMS 301, combinatorics? Did you do recurrence relations in there? See, yeah, but not a comprehensive yeah, okay? So what is a recurrence relation? Let me just review this, because they're good things. A recurrence relation is an equation defined in terms of itself. Okay? Let's take a look at the recurrence relation. An equals an minus 1. A sub n equals a sub n minus 1 plus 1. Starting with a sub 1 equal 1. What is a sub 2 if a sub 1 is equal to 1 and we have this, the rest of them are governed by this formula? What is a sub 2? It is, for a sub 2 is going to be equal to a sub 1 plus 1. What is a sub 1? It is 1. It's got to be equal to 2. Does everybody see that? What is a sub 3? It's going to be equal to a sub 3 minus 1, or a sub 2, plus 1. A sub 2, we said, was 2. A sub 3 is 2 plus 1. It's going to be equal to 3. This is a recursive equation that is really defining the integer function a sub n equals n. Do people see that? See how this magical formula, this recursive formula, the answers to this depend upon themselves, right? Okay? But it's a perfectly well-defined formula here, okay? And we can use it to compute what's a sub 10 going to be. Well, I don't know what a sub 10 is, but I do know it's 1 plus a sub 9. And what is a sub 9? 1 plus a sub 8, dot, 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 ka-chunk, ka-chunk, recursion. It'll come down to an answer. Does everybody see that? And in fact, a sub 9 is going to be 9. Okay? Any questions? So a recurrence relation is a program that depends upon itself. What would happen if we had a recurrence for program a sub n equals 2 of a sub n plus 1, like that? What would that recurrence program look like? Does this make any sense? Where the value of the nth term depends upon the value of the nth term. Does that make any sense? It's like an infinite loop, right? Does everybody see that? It's like a recursive program that doesn't work its way down to the base conditions. So that's bad, right? In an interesting recurrence relation, the arguments have to get smaller if they're going to work their way down to the point where you can evaluate them. Does everybody see that? Okay. Any questions? You can compute all kinds of interesting functions with recurrence relations, just as a little extra digression, because recurrences are good things. What is the function computed by the recurrence a sub n equals 2 times a sub n minus 1? A sub 1 equals what? 2. Again, let's work it out. What's a sub 2 going to be in this case? 2 times a sub 1. What's a sub 1? It's equal to 4. Does everybody see that? What is a sub 3 going to be equal to? 2 times a sub 2, which happens to be, we said, 4. It's 8. Does everybody see this recurrence generates the function 2 to the n? Okay? The reason why you should have learned about recurrence relations in combinatorics class is a lot of things are easy to count using recurrence relations. But that's not the point here. Okay? Any questions? One example of that, though, that's interesting is that there's also weird kind of functions that get computed by recurrence relations. Weird, but somehow still natural. What about this recurrence relation? A sub n equals n times a sub n minus 1. What is a sub 2 going to be for that? 2 times a sub 1, or 2. What is a sub 3 going to be? 3 times a sub 2, which would be 2, which would be 6. A sub 4 is going to be 4 times a sub 3, which would be times 6, 24. Does everybody see that it's generating n factorial? Now, n factorial is really a weird function. I mean, you may say, well, look at an exclamation point. It's not that complicated. You've seen it before. But realize there's not that many sim functions. You can't do algebra on this the way you could with these other things. Okay? The most important thing is that it comes out naturally defined by a recurrence. Okay? Any questions? And if I ask you to evaluate a recurrence, does everybody see that if I give you a recurrence relation, an equation like this, and I give you the basis conditions, and I ask you to write a program to tell me what a sub n is, it would be pretty easy to do that by writing a recursive program to do that evaluation. Do people see that? Could you write a recursive program to compute n factorial? Sure, it would look something like fact sub n is equal to what? N times fact sub n minus 1. Does everybody agree with that? Return this. And I have to do a basis case thing here, right? If n is equal to 1, return 1. And this is a program that now computes factorial. Any questions? Okay, any questions about recurrence relations and why they're good things, how they work? Any questions? Okay. So let's look at a simple non-trivial recurrence relation and see how we would write a program to compute it. Because what dynamic programming is going to be is evaluating recurrences by storing partial results. That is the thing that we're doing here, right? Here are the Fibonacci numbers. This is the recurrence for the Fibonacci numbers. Is there anybody who's never heard of the Fibonacci numbers? Okay, they're somehow a famous sequence of numbers. They come up in a variety of things. They count rabbits, they count all kinds of things, okay? But the main thing they do is they're numbers generated by this recurrence that fib sub n is equal to fib sub n minus 1 plus fib sub n minus 2. So what is fib f2 going to be? It's going to be fib of 1, 2 minus 1, or the fib of 1, which is 1, plus fib of 0, 1 plus 0, that's going to be 1, 2. What's fib of 3 going to be? Fib of 2 plus fib of 1. Fib of 2 is 1, fib of 1 is 1, fib of 3 is 2. Any questions about the Fibonacci numbers? Has anybody ever written a program to compute the Fibonacci numbers recursively? Okay, yeah, I've done it. Simple, right? What does the program look like? Again, something like fib sub n is equal to if n equals 0, return 0. If n equals 1, return 1. If n equals otherwise, return fib sub n minus 1 plus fib sub n minus 2. Does everybody see that program? Recursive program to compute a recurrence relation. Notice the recurrence in both of them, right? There's a natural thing there. How much time does this program take? It's a nice, innocent looking 3 or 4 line program. Okay, how much time does it take? Okay, if we analyze this program. Okay, and let's try to think about that. That's not completely obvious. Is it long or is it short even? The interesting thing is that will become obvious how long it takes if we think about the execution strategy here. What is going to happen when we call the fib sub n recursive program? To compute fib sub 6, it starts out saying, I want fib of 5. I want fib of 4. I want fib of 3. I want fib of 2. I want fib of, hey, fib of 1 I got. Back up here. Fib of 2, I also need, oh, I got fib of 2. Now I've got fib of 1. Fib of 0, fib of 2. Back up here. Okay, this is a basis case. Good. Basis case plus what I just computed, I've got this thing. To do this, I've got to now go compute this. And to compute this, I've got to go do this and then do this. Does everybody see that in this recursive call program, as we are doing it, something wasteful is going on? What is wasteful that is going on? Yes. I am going to recompute values that I already had before. Does everybody see that? Here I already add the value of fib of 2. But you're still asking for it again. Does everybody see that? Because I still add it, I got to compute it again. Okay? And then back here, fib of 5, fib of 3, it's going to compute fib of 3 again. And to compute fib of 4, it's going to compute fib of 4 again. Each of which requires computing a lot of other things again and again and again. Okay, any questions about that? Do you see why this program is wasteful? Okay, that it is computing things it in principle already knows the answer to. Okay, any questions about that? Well, how wasteful is it? Okay, well, let's think about this. I claim that if we think about it, this fib of 6 is 13, the reason it is 13 is because there are 13 fib of 1s that we called. Does everybody agree with that? Does that add up to 13? Actually, why doesn't it add up to 13? Probably because this is supposed to be 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The reason is because it should be an 8. Okay? Does everybody agree that the 6th Fibonacci number is 8? Right? That's right. It was, you know, fib of what you set the index to. Does everybody agree that the value of the Fibonacci number is equal to the number of fib of 1s that get called in this? Right? Does everybody agree with that? So the amount of time this program takes is at least going to be the number of fib of 1s. And since fib of 1 is 1, it's the number of fib of n. To compute fib of n, does everybody agree that to compute fib of n, it takes at least fib of n steps? Because we're building it up one piece at a time. People get that? So how big is fib of n? Well, it turns out that the ratio of two Fibonacci numbers, neighboring Fibonacci numbers, is the golden ratio, which is 1.1 something or other. That means that the nth Fibonacci number is the golden ratio to the nth. F sub n grows as 1.6 to the n. That program is an exponential program. Fib sub n, if you try to run a recursive Fibonacci program to compute fib of n, you will find it will die. It will not die, it just won't go into never-never land. Around the time of what? Fib of 25, fib of 30? It's just going to take, every time you add one, it's going to take 1.6 times, it's almost going to double in time. By the time you get to 20 and 30, forget about it. This is an exponential computation if we compute it that way. Any questions about that? Does that mean we cannot compute the nth Fibonacci number for large n? Or is there perhaps a faster algorithm? Okay, yes, there is a faster algorithm, right? What is the faster algorithm? The faster algorithm is to simply keep track of, instead of writing it as a recursive program, write it as a loop and keep track of an array of values. F, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, dot, 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 up to n. And say, well, fib sub 0 is 0, 1, fib sub 0 is 0, fib of 1 is 1. Then for I grows from 1 to n, fib sub 2, okay, let's say, is equal to the previous 2, the next 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 20, what's that, 21, 34, 55, dot, dot, dot. Okay? How much time does that take to compute fib sub n? How much time will it now take to compute the nth value? Yes. N time. It should be obvious it's n time. Why? There's a loop going around n times. And each time we're just looking the thing up in a table. Does everybody see that? So this is n times a constant. O of n, big improvement from 1.6 to the n, don't you think? Any questions? And what made this possible? Basically, we were trading space for time. Okay, we stored the values to avoid recomputing them, and then looked them up before we actually tried to compute them. That is the idea here. Any questions about that? Any questions at all about how we computed Fibonacci numbers in linear time and why that's kind of interesting? You see people walking out, they don't think it's so interesting. Okay? Everybody see why this is a big improvement to compute the recurrence relation this way? Any questions about that? Okay? Any questions at all? Yes? Okay, in fact, you want to say you want to do even better. If we kept track of the last two values, that actually would be enough. So we didn't have to use linear space. We could all have done this getting away with constant space. But, so let's say you're right. So let's say I'm not so concerned about that right now. Okay, any questions? I'm willing to spend linear space to do this. Any questions? Okay. So we're going to go through another example of the same kind of thing, okay? But let me reiterate again what dynamic programming is and why I love it, okay? It's not going to be clear yet. Dynamic programming is what? A technique for efficiently computing recurrence relations by storing partial results. And once you understand what you're doing, okay, it will be very, very easy to design these algorithms for us. So you saw how easily I wrote Floyd's algorithm down, right? Remember I said, hey, why don't I talk about Floyd's? I suddenly wrote the Floyd's recurrence down. It's easy, once you understand it, to reconstruct these things on demand. And again, there's some a bunch of war stories in the book about how dynamic programming is really useful. And one other story, I just want to tell you, I can't resist it, because it happened to me this week that I was, another example of how dynamic programming is both useful, and once you understand it, it's that hard. I was working with one of my graduate students, my PhD students, on a problem with in biology. And we were designing genes to do something. And so we finally had this idea of a thing we wanted to design it for. So I said, hey student, Demetrius, design an algorithm for, put together an algorithm to design this gene. Demetrius said, well, what do we do? How do we do this? I said, it's dynamic programming. Put right there, and this honest truth, thought about it. You're right. And that was the end. That was the discussion. Because once we understood dynamic programming together, the algorithm design in some sense is routine from that point. Again, it takes a while to get to that point. I'm not trying just to humble you, but to try to motivate you. That there's something here that once you grasp it, is not that hard and gives you power. Any questions? Okay, enough commercial. Okay, and again, not the same topic. So let's do the same thing we did with the Fibonacci numbers, just to make sure that we get it, with a more interesting recurrence relation, one you may not have seen quite the same way before. How many of you have heard of the binomial coefficients? Certainly if you took combinatorics, you should have seen the binomial coefficients. N choose K, what is that? That's defined as the number of ways to choose K things out of N possibilities, right? How many will admit to seeing the binomial coefficients before? We have never seen them before, okay? Binomial coefficients are important counting numbers. They count how many ways you form committees. They count how many ways you go across grids. They count a lot of things. That's why you've seen them before. But here's a question for you. If I ask you to write a program to compute the value, I want you to write a function, bin coef sub n comma k, to compute the nth value of the value of the nth of the binomial coefficient n choose k. How would you write a program to do it? Okay. Does anyone know what the value of binomial coefficients are? Yeah. Recurrence formula, but let's think about the way you might probably would first think about doing it. You know that in fact n choose k was equal to n factorial divided by n minus k factorial. Does everyone remember that? So one thing you could do is do this like this, compute fact sub n divided by fact sub n minus k times fact sub k. Does everybody agree that this is now a correct program to compute n choose k? But it's a terrible program to compute n choose k. Why is that? Does anybody know why? Okay, it's not exponential. Runtime, this is fast, actually. Okay, the only problem is it won't work on your computer. Okay, it will very quickly crash. Why is that? Because the numbers are too big, right? What is the binomial coefficient 100 choose 99? Does anyone know what the value of that is? 100, right? I think that's 100, right? Now, what would your program do? Start out by computing 100 factorial. How many does 100 factorial need? 50-ish, 60-ish? How many digits do you have on your, let's say you got a 64-bit machine, you're cruising, but you're going to crash? Yes? You may want to play some games here, but I claim computing with factorials and trying to cancel is a tricky business at best. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? You know, I mean, you're saying you don't want to compute. You only want to compute the product of the first n minus k terms, right? And have these things cancel. So you'll do this with a do loop, and it'll be better. But I still claim that there will be values where that is going to be very, very bad. Okay? Any questions? So this is not the way to compute binomial coefficients. What is the way to compute binomial coefficients? Okay? You don't know. You know that you should recognize that they're good values, they're good things. People want to use them for things. Pascal's triangle. Who remembers Pascal's triangle from high school? Who saw Pascal's triangle in high school? Okay, who remembers it? It's a smaller number, okay? Pascal's triangle was this thing where you built a triangle of numbers. By taking for each number, you wrote an extra 1 on each row, and then you said the sum of these two, 1 plus 5 is equal to 6, 1, 5, this is equal to 15, 20, 15, 6. Each element here was equal to the sum of the two elements above it. That was Pascal's triangle. How many people remember this now, remember doing this? Brings back memories, right? Why were you doing it in high school? Well, you did it, right? Somehow it was memorable, right? What you were really doing was computing binomial coefficients, just to remind you, okay? Because what you were doing, why did Pascal do this? What are the number of committees? Let's take a look at this. What is, let's say, 3 choose 1? What is 3 choose 1? 3. And what is 3 choose 2? 3. And 3 choose 0? 1, right? Does everyone see that? 1, 3, 3. Okay? The same thing works with 4. 4 choose 0 is what? 1. 4 choose 1? 4. 4 choose 2. What is that? Oh, you've got your factorial formula, right? 4 factorial over 2 factorial, 2 factorial. You liked that formula before, right? That was 4 times 3 divided by 2. That was 6, right? But you got it by Pascal's triangle. Any questions about that? That's what Pascal's triangle was. But what Pascal's triangle really was a high school's attempt to teach you dynamic programming. Okay? Teacher didn't use that word. Okay? But what was he doing? What was the teacher doing? They were showing you how to compute a value here. Okay? Depending upon two other values. Right? That made it sort of a recursive thing. Okay? Once you had the previous row, the next row was easy. Everybody see that? None of you were at all intimidated if I asked you to build the seventh row here, right? Just add the numbers up because the numbers are there waiting for you. Okay? So let's compute, okay, the nth binomial coefficients. Pascal's triangle, okay, was based on this recurrence relation. Okay, it said that n choose k was equal to two things, the sum of two things on the nth row value was the sum of two things on the n minus first row. N minus 1 choose k minus 1 plus n minus 1 choose k. That's what Pascal is doing, right? This value was the sum of those two other things. The thing on the nth row was the sum of two things on the n minus first row. And why did it work? Let's think about that. Why did it work? Okay, it's correct because, just as a digression, every n choose k counts the number of committees that you can form of k elements from the numbers 1 through n. Does everybody agree with that? Well, if I take any committee of k elements on the numbers 1 through n, either it includes the nth element or it doesn't. Does everybody agree with that? Can't disagree with that. That's pretty clear. If we include the nth element in our set of 4 of k, to finish the job, we've got to pick k minus 1 other ones from the numbers 1 through n minus 1, right? That counts all the subsets that include n. How many of them don't include n? Well, we're going to have to pick k elements because we don't have any of them so far. But since none of them are allowed to be n, we're also picking k out of n minus 1. And that's why this recurrence works. Any question about that? Okay. Interesting to see why it's correct, okay, although that's not my key point here. Any questions? My question is, how would you write a program to do Pascal's triangle, to do this thing? Okay? Let's think about it. Okay? You need want to try to write a program just like you did with Fib that's evaluating this recurrence. What do we need to store? Let's think about that. What is it that you need to store? Okay, it suffices to store the previous row. Okay, let's come back here. It would suffice to store the previous row. Does everybody agree with that? But for the moment, just like with Fib, I don't really care that much about saving space. Does everybody agree that if I store the whole table, what I'm really doing here, if I tilt my head sideways, I have a rectangular table. Does everybody see that? Okay? And I am building it up one diagonal, if you wish, at a time. Any questions about that? So let me show you a program that computes, okay, the value of the nth binomial, the value of n choose k, okay? Because you're going to be in dynamic programming evaluating recurrences. You're going to do it by storing partial results. So before we go to a recurrence that is more clever, let's look at this one that you really understand. That's sort of something that you have some sense about. To compute the value of n choose m, I'm going to build a table that is going to store for any smaller value of the first argument and the second argument. What are the values I have so far? Okay? I am going to initialize certain basis cases that I know. What is the value of n choose 0? 1. How many ways are there to pick no people from all the people in this class? They're standing over there. 1, okay? It's there, right? And how many ways are there to pick n people out of n people? 1, you guys. That's it. Okay? 1. So what am I going to do? I'm going to start initializing my table to these boundary cases. Does everybody see that? For all n sub zero, I zero is 1. For all n, BC sub NN is 1. Does everybody see that? So now I've got this part of my Pascal's triangle sort of stored up. Now what value can I compute? I can't compute this one. What value can I compute? This thing over here, right? I've got this guy sitting there. Okay? So what am I now going to do? I'm going to have 2 loops. Okay, and this is maybe where I've got to be a little bit clever here. I goes from 1 to n, because that's the value that I want. J goes from 1 to I. Okay? Actually, I'm going to try to compute. You notice that my loop here isn't going through to m at all. I am going to compute the full matrix up to the nth row, n choose n, right? And then once I have that, I'm going to return n choose m, because m has got to be smaller than that, right? It'd be interesting. Okay? So what am I going to be doing here? I am first going to be choosing my top row is now going to be 2. I'm going to fill out all the things where my numerator is 2. That is here. And it's going to say that for all values of j in between 2, 1 and less than 1, or really 1, add up the two values above it, 2. Then I'm going to go down to the next loop. Now I'm on the third row, and I'm going to try each value from 3. Everybody see that? And now I'm going to compute this one. This was 2. This is going to be 3. Okay? Do people see how this program is working? A question like, I don't see how it is working, is a good question. Any questions here? It looks like I'm evaluating it in this program. N is my row number, right? Because the top value, N, is the row number. And I am filling it in the whole row at a time. Does everybody see that? How much time will this program take to compute N choose M? Okay. Let's see if we understand it. N plus M? I claim no. Okay. How much time is this program going to take? N times, actually the way that I did it, which is actually maybe not the slickest way of all, the way that I did it actually, it's going to take N times N. Why is that? But look at this. This is going for I goes from 1 to n. And then j is going basically up to I, which is as large as n. Note that this loop goes around at most n times. And it's nested within this loop, which is going around at most n times. This is an order n squared program. Okay, I could probably have done it where it's something like it's nm. But I didn't do it that way. Okay? Any questions about that? Any questions about this recurrence, this program and how it works? If you understand how this program works, and I encourage you to check it out really carefully to get the nuts and the bolts down, okay? Then you will understand the mechanics of the dynamic programming, okay? There's still another idea that is needed, okay? But this is the mechanics that's important. If you don't understand the mechanics, you're out of business. Any questions about this? Any questions? Yes, questions. Yeah? This is a two-dimensional array, right? See, it's two-dimensional array. Okay, any questions? I have a question I didn't hear, so I'm not trying to ignore you. Any questions? Okay, here's a question now. Was that the only way we could have filled in our table? Let's think about this. I have symmetry. So one thing you're saying is if I wanted to save time, I only need to fill in 1/2. That's one thing I could have done to make it faster. On a exponential program, you have to worry about making it faster. To me, saving half the time, so it's only n squared, I'm not, I mean, you're right. Okay, if I cared about it, I could do that. I don't mean to dismiss it. Yes? The other thing to note here is that, as I said, I only really had to go up to M, right? If I had to go down to the nth row, but did I really need to compute all the cells on the first M rows if all I cared about is N choose M? Everybody see that? In fact, really, I had a lot of flexibility in how I filled this thing in. Let me maybe draw that again. I'm sorry. Boom. I had a lot of flexibility here on how I could have filled this thing in. Right? I have to put this element next. What could be my choice for the next element? I could put this one in. Right? What possibilities are for the next element? Yeah? I could put in this guy next or that guy. Does everybody see that? I have both of the preconditions I need to fill in what I have, right? So there's several different orders I might choose to fill this table in on. The important thing is that the prerequisites are there. So long as the two guys I need are done before me, I can be filled in. Everybody see that? I did it the simple way. I just went bunk, 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 right? But I could have done it in other orders if I wanted. Any questions? And as we noticed here, if all I cared about was this particular value, if this was NM, if this was the NMth cell, all I really needed to fill in was this part of the matrix. Does everybody see that? So I may have done too much work here. In fact, if N was very close to M, if it was N choose N minus 1, this would have only required filling in a linear number of cells instead of a quadratic number of cells, right? Any questions here? Maybe that's a little bit more detail that I want to get into. But do people understand now how I evaluated this recurrence relation? Okay, by using dynamic programming. Any questions? Going once, twice. Okay, good. So when we're gonna now start to look at using dynamic programming, not so much to evaluate a recurrence relation you learned about in your combinatorics class, but to actually solve algorithmic problems that are, you know, real algorithmic problem sounding like things, okay? And the approach that we're going to use for all these things is a three-step approach. We take your problem and you formulate the answer as a recursive program or a recurrence relation or a recursive algorithm. You're then going to show that instead of computing everything all over and over again, there's really not that many different values, different subproblems your recursive program gets to. It may try to call them again and again, but if you stored the answer and reused it, there weren't that many different answers to store. And so if you actually computed the answers, stored them, and didn't recompute them, it wouldn't be that expensive. And then finally, you need to specify an order to evaluate the recurrence, to fill in the cells. So the things that are waiting, that you need are waiting for you. Okay? Any questions about that? That is the procedure we're using. Any questions? Okay. Let me tell you about, just mention briefly, the first real problem we're going to use dynamic programming for. Okay? It's an important problem, okay, that it has to do with string edit distance. Okay? The problem is, how do we match? Let's say we want to look for schema in the Bible. I think we talked about this as an example earlier in the string. We talked about string matching, right? We said that there was a string matching problem where you had a word, let's say schema, a pattern, and you had a text like the Bible, and you wanted to find out if schema was in the Bible. I don't know if any of you looked, but did you find it? Didn't find it. No, it's not there. Okay? But there is a place in the Bible where Skeena may be there with a small number of changes. Everybody agree? I agree. Skeena's not in the Bible. But there must be something else. Let's say skiing is in the Bible. Okay, skiing. Maybe there's a part I didn't read about, that cold weather part. Okay? Skiing, S-K-I-I-N, skiing, okay? Is that it? Okay, anyway, the claim is that although the word may not be there exactly, there is probably a place where, by changing some characters, deleting some, changing some, skiing is somehow closest to somewhere in the Bible, right? Skin, okay? Probably talk about skin, okay? How many changes does it take to turn skin into Skeena? Okay? What do you have to do to turn skin into Skeena? Okay? You have to add an E. Everybody agree with that? And you have to delete an A. So certainly there is a place, we believe you, there's skin in the Bible, and I seem to remember that, okay? There is a way that you can find Skeena occurring in the Bible within a distance of two changes. Everybody agree with that? Okay? So one question we're going to be interested in is, given a pattern, trying to identify where is it best found in the text. Okay? Again, sometimes when you search for something, you have a spelling mistake. Right? You type something in and you say, find this word there. You won't find it if you made a spelling mistake in the text or in the pattern. But there probably is a closest match that is interesting to you. And next class, we're going to talk about how we use dynamic programming to find that kind of thing. Any questions about it? Any questions at all about recurrences or how we evaluate them? Look at the binomial coefficient example. If you can really understand that, you're in better shape for what's to come. Thanks a lot. See you guys next class. Oh, before you go, one thing that's important is that tomorrow is the pizza with the prof. I have a few slots left. If somebody wants to dine with me, come over here. Okay, it's going to be at 11:45 at my office. Okay, so if you're interested in joining us, come down and we'll put you on the list. Okay, some people signed up there. What's left? Okay, thanks a lot.